thanks for your patience with that. Hi, my name is Leslie Craig. I work for the Office on Women's Health in Region 5, located in Chicago. I want to thank Dr. Kelly here for moderating and my co-presenters, and I'd also like to thank all of you again for sticking it out. I really appreciate it. I also want to point out a couple people in the audience that my fellow OWH, Office on Women's Health, colleagues, Ms. Marion Mahegan and Ms. Fran Ash-Goins, thank you for attending today. Today I'll be talking about the Region 5 efforts on gender-responsive training addressing the needs of incarcerated women and girls. I have no financial relationships to disclose. The Office on Women's Health was established in 1991 as a part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and part of what we do is we work to raise awareness about the differences between health and social services between men and women, and in particular, our incarcerated women and girls is a prime example of that. I wanted to let you know that there are 10 regions of HHS OWH, and today I'm going to be just talking about our work in Region 5, but there is an overall effort of the OWH office to focus on this population. Region 5 consists of the Great Lakes states listed here. And I wanted to give you a little background on how our office got involved in the population. In 2001, Michelle Hirsch, who is on the program to present, unfortunately she couldn't be here today, so she asked if I would stand in her place. She was introduced to the population with a public health nurse from the Indiana Department of Public Health. So she saw the need and decided to do a little more research about the population. So the research here is not the research she would have found in 01, but I wanted to give you guys up-to-date stats. So there are more than 1 million women in jails, prisons, and community correctional facilities today, and that number is increasing, and the growth can be seen in each component of corrections. So what is the typical population of women and girls in the criminal justice system? This list was created in 2003, and it's pretty accurate to today. African-American women are 2.5 times more likely than Hispanic women to be incarcerated and 4.5 times more likely than white women. The list continues down. I have the general population. About 12% of the general population have symptoms of mental disorders, but if you look at state prisons and jails, in state prisons it's about 73%, and in jails it's about 75%. So it's very clear that we need to acknowledge this profile because it does demonstrate a tremendous need for healthcare services for this population. So we started out by just visiting the prison facilities in our region, beginning with Indiana, where we met Dana Blank, who is the former superintendent of the Indiana Women's Prisons. And Dana was a great person for us to originally meet with because she had a very strong duty and responsibility to take care of the women in her care, and she was a strong proponent for gender-responsive services. So that's how we came to learn about this. And so in response to this, we started doing trainings on gender-responsive and trauma-informed services. So since then, we've done about 7 training events with more than 800 participants on the impact of trauma on women and girls. And today, I'm going to be talking about some of the work that we've done with the Health and Medicine Policy Research Group. So these trainings were designed to educate women and girls, individuals that work with women and girls that are either incarcerated or at-risk populations on gender-responsive and trauma-informed services. And today I'll be talking about the last two listed, primarily the last one that's bolded. So in our work, we work a lot with Dr. Stephanie Covington. She is of the Center of Gender and Justice, which is located here in La Jolla, California. And Dr. Stephanie Covington has worked for over 25 years creating gender-specific materials for girls and over 15 years in the criminal justice system, and she's just phenomenal. I would highly encourage you to look into the work that she has done. So in the trainings, we ask participants to think about the role that gender plays in all aspects of women and girls' lives, not just incarcerated women and girls, but all women and girls. And we acknowledge that there are differences in health issues, such as the signs and symptoms of a heart attack or, you know, a way that sexually transmitted diseases manifest themselves. And then we look at substance abuse, mental health, and trauma, and we recognize that for women, often these are escape and survival mechanisms tied closely to trauma and mental health. And then the third bullet point, I think we all don't need to elaborate on the gender disparities that persist with those. And then finally, women and girls do disproportionately experience violence and trauma in their lives, and this can include sexual abuse, physical abuse, emotional abuse, domestic violence, self-inflicted violence, witnessing violence, intimate partner violence, the list can go on. So who experiences trauma and abuse? We ask participants to think about this, and oftentimes their response is the women and girls we work with. And so if you look at this list, it's clearly linked to, women and girls in the criminal justice system is listed here, but clearly all of these are characteristics of and are consistent with the national profile of women offenders. Another thing that we talk about is the Adverse Childhood Experiences Study. I don't know if any of you were able to attend that on Monday, but Dr. Folletti presented on the ACE study and his findings, and I would highly encourage you to look into it. Essentially, the Adverse Childhood Experiences Study looks at the number of ACEs you experience, which is an exposure to an adverse childhood experience, and those will have a profound effect on your long-term health. So you can look at the chart and kind of see how an adverse childhood experience will eventually result in an early death. So these are the ACEs themselves. They divide them into 10. The last two are, it's 9 here, but the last two divide into emotional and physical neglect. And the way the study works is that you have exposure to one of these categories, and that counts as a certain amount of points. And as your points total up, they've found that as your ACE score increases, so does your risk of numerous health problems throughout life, including smoking, alcoholism, injection of drugs, and obesity. Dr. Folletti mentioned on Monday that they're finding that women are 50% more likely than men to have an ACE score greater than 5. So how can we apply the ACE study to women and girls in the criminal justice system? So this year demonstrates the difference between women in the criminal justice system and women in general. And from this, it's clear that incarcerated women and girls experience more trauma than the general population, and they experience it earlier in life. Finally, so the ACE study is a good model for us to look at, but in 2006, a second study was performed called the Childhood Traumatic Events Study, which modeled itself after the ACE study and looked specifically at female offenders. And their outcomes were very similar. The greater exposure you have to these childhood traumatic events, there's a greater increase in poor health outcomes later in life. Another part of the training, so with all of this information, you take in all this information about trauma and where trauma comes from, and you learn about how these women experience all this trauma, and then we put up this slide and we say, look at these characteristics. Are they familiar to you? Does this look like something that you normally see in your clients? And we use this to demonstrate the effects of trauma, and those are really the last characteristics, the end result of either a traumatic event or multiple traumas in your life. So, finally, how do we incorporate all of these concepts of trauma into our work? While the Office on Women's Health doesn't provide direct services to women and girls in the criminal justice system, what we do is try to provide the tools to those that do work with those women and girls so that they are trauma-informed and they are using gender-responsive models so that they can deal with these populations in the most appropriate manner. So you might be wondering, what does trauma-informed mean? Trauma-informed services are essentially services that are provided for problems other than trauma, but require knowledge about violence against women and the impact of various forms of trauma, and that increases the effectiveness of the services. So the provider will take into account trauma and will be able to work to manage and deal with different coping strategies of their patients, and they'll also be able to be aware that the trauma exists, and they won't do anything that will re-traumatize them or re-trigger a negative experience for them. Gender responsive means that you're creating an environment that reflects an understanding of the realities of the lives of women and girls and addresses in response to their strengths and challenges. So the key concepts or the guiding principles are the acknowledgement that gender makes a difference, and then creating a safe and respectful environment and developing policies, practices, and programs that will promote healthy relationships. The second set of guiding principles are the services. So they'll address the substance abuse, trauma, and mental health issues, and then provide women with opportunities to improve their socioeconomic status, and then establish a system of comprehensive and collaborative community services, so that we're really giving these women and girls a well-rounded, full care, I suppose would be the best term for that. So then if we get into the discussion of the actual trainings that we held in 2008, we invited Dr. Covington to come and speak with other experts again, and our office hosted, we partnered with the Health and Medicine Policy Research Group, as I mentioned before, to host the trainings. So the two trainings that we held were listed here. Day one, creating gender-responsive services, was just targeting population individuals that work with at-risk women and girls and wasn't necessarily focused on the criminal justice system. But day two was focused specifically on the juvenile justice system. So we targeted and invited managerial and senior staff at correctional facilities, particularly the Illinois Department of the Juvenile Justice System, the IDJJ, and the Cook County Juvenile Detention Center. And after hearing presentations from Dr. Covington and other presenters, HMPRG, Health and Medicine Policy Research Group, presented the Bill of Health Rights for Incarcerated Girls, and I've included those. I have packets over there, and you're all welcome to take them. The Bill of Health is listed in there, and I would strongly encourage you to check it out. It's very interesting. And then they provided a set of recommendations specific to each of the centers. And despite the economic downturn and budget cuts, we're very happy to say that there has been a positive response to the recommendations. And since the April event, Health and Medicine Policy Research Group has met with both of the centers to discuss the implementation of these recommendations. This is just a short list. This isn't all of them, and it's not in their entirety, but they have agreed, I have the last one bolded because they have agreed to train their staff on gender-responsive and trauma-informed services. And so this fall we'll be working with Health and Medicine Policy Research Group to ensure that all of their staff are trained. So I'd like to say thank you. I'll be very brief. I'd like to say thank you to Dr. Stephanie Covington for all of her guidance. I'd like to say thank you to HMPRG for their tremendous dedication to this population. And I'd also like to say thank you to the Office on Women's Health for allowing our region to work so hard on this effort. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. That was great. And I know Leslie had practiced for 15 minutes, and she got it down to 12, so she was really working with us here. Our next speaker is Kim Carter, who is from the Time for Change Foundation.